This program is sponsored by Blazing Grace Ministries.
This radio program is PG-13. Parents strongly caution some material may be inappropriate for children under the age of 13. Send me free of the chains holding me.
Is anybody out there hearing me? Set me free.
Jesus' mission was to comfort those who mourn, bind up the brokenhearted, proclaim liberty to captives, and open prison doors for those who are bound. For those who want more than status quo Christianity has to offer, Blazing Grace Radio begins now. And here is your host, Mike Janung.
Hey, Mike Janung here. Welcome back to Blazing Grace Radio. Thank you for joining us on this battlefield called life. And longtime listeners know I've been starting out with Battlefield Called Life because that's what it is. We live in an asylum these days. And it used to be the enemy would try and hide and get people to think he didn't exist. After 2020, the gloves came off and he's not hiding anymore. It's right up in our face. So spiritual warfare is a part of every believer's life. And he is destroying lives left and right. And unfortunately, we still often don't come to terms with that. So I'll give you some examples. These are just some news titles from some articles just in the last week. I'm just going to read the headline. House of Prayer Church Pastor Facing Multiple Sexual Abuse Charges and Pornography in Georgia, Child Porn. Next, a youth pastor arrested on child porn charges 2 weeks after stepping down from his church. This is in Harrison County, Texas. Next, North Texas megachurch pastor resigns due to sexual sin and moral failure. This is a church of 8,000 to 9,000. Next, California pastor arrested for viewing child sex abuse material, child porn. Next, Long Beach pastor, teacher resigns after admitting to long-term moral failure. Every single day in the U.S., a pastor or a worship leader or a trusted leader at a church is being arrested or exposed for illegal pornography or an affair or something like that and sexual abuse. We are a church at war, but we do not act like it. We act like we assembled to have our little Bible study and we go home, but we're not being equipped and challenged to go to war. And one of the biggest things a church at war should be doing is putting prayer right at the top. And if I was running a church, I'd be running prayer meetings 7 days a week. And we would be a spiritual nuclear bomb and we would pay the price. And that's the challenge we have to put to people, is that sexual sin is destroying many lives in the church at every single level, and we see this on a daily basis from the people who come to us for help. There has to be a sense of fire. There has to be a sense of urgency that we're not just meeting together to make everybody feel good. There has to be an equipping for war because lives are being destroyed every single day. And how often do you even hear what I just mentioned in any church? More than maybe every 3 to 6 months, well, porn's bad, don't do it, no duh. But it's also destroying lives. So this week, I welcome back Sandy Glazebrook. She shared her story last week, and you can listen to it on the podcast or on our website. You can go to Spotify or Apple Podcast. She is a 68-year-old married Christ follower, a mother and a grandmother, a former drug addict, and a survivor of physical, sexual, mental, and verbal abuse. She is active in her church and facilitates a ministry for women who have experienced abuse called Mending the Soul, a 12-week program to bring hope and healing from trauma and abuse. Sandy, welcome back to the program.
Thank you, Mike.
I'm curious, so those articles, headlines I just read off, what goes through your mind when you hear that?
It's sad, it's disgusting, and it's real. It's real. I have ladies that come into my group and have shared things like that of, you know, we've talked about the same thing you're saying. But abuse is, it's there. It's everywhere. It's in the church. I was one of them. I was in the church. My ex was in the church. We sat in the church, and we'd go home, and he'd beat me up, or he'd sexually assault me, and we'd go back to church. So you can't be fooled by the mask. We all have them. I think we all wear a mask at times. Mm. But people do, like you'd mentioned, you go into church and you go in, you put the time card in the closet, you do the thing our pastor says out a lot. And you don't know what's really happening to the person that's sitting next to you. And they're suffering. There's so many people within the church that are suffering and don't feel that they're in a safe environment. And that's, I think, for women of abuse, they don't trust anybody because the person that loves them is the one that's hurting them. So how could Sandy or Susie or whoever it is that's running the groups or the pastor help them, because they don't love them like their husband loved them? So I think that causes people to step back. But I feel grateful for my church, because our pastor and his wife have always been very open to addressing the abuse in our country. Mm-hmm. That's why we have Mending the Soul at Calvary Chapel. That's why we do some of that human trafficking. We have that in our church, where we have ministry going on for that. And Jim will he'll say, when I came to them about it, they know my story. Great idea. Put it together. He doesn't stop us from doing things that are from God. And I believe that with all my heart. So me, I haven't experienced a church telling me, no, we're not going to discuss it. Mm. Does he discuss? It'll come out every once in a while on the pulpit on Sundays, but not in detail, like depth, because that's more, I think, for abuse, I think it's more of a, an intimate grouping, to be honest.
So what do you say to the person who says, well, I don't hear or see much about physical, emotional abuse in the church, and certainly among Christians, so is this an issue among our doors, inside of our doors?
Well, it could be, yes, because people are afraid to speak. Mm. And unless I believe, and I, now, don't get me wrong, there are churches that don't want anything to do with it. They don't want to talk about what's really happening. But you have to be able, you have, as the abused, you have to find that courage to be able to talk to somebody, to ask, because they may not advertise it. That doesn't mean it's not available. I'm not saying that's for all churches, but I'm saying it's out there. Mending the Soul is global. So if somebody's out there and they need help, or they want to be in a group with somebody who's gone through it and has gotten to the other side, look up Mending the Soul and find one near where you live, because it's global.
So give me three or four key points of your own personal recovery process. What did that look like?
Well, leaning into Jesus, first and foremost, grieving the loss of the relationships, being open to my part of the destruction of my relationships with my ex-husbands and my children, being responsible for that, and for me, honestly, sharing it, being transparent about it. And one of the biggest things for me that helped me is allowing my children to let it out, to talk to me. And it wasn't easy, but what they said wasn't wrong. I let them go through it. I watch them go through it, and I'm so blessed and grateful every day to Jesus that my kids broke the cycle.
What does grieving look like?
Grieving for me was all the time, me grieving the loss. I just talked about it last night at Mending the Soul, grieving the years that were wasted on something that was never going to change. All those years and all the experiences and the happy moments that I didn't have when I was young. There was too much in the big picture, those early years, there was too much ugly, too much sad, too much running in my mind, running, going whichever direction I could go to have a little bit of peace. I have night terrors to this day, and my first marriage ended in 83, and I still have night terrors. When I first left my second husband and moved in with my sister, they witnessed it. Sam witnesses it. We've been married 26 years, and I still have violent, violent night terrors. I always thought they were nightmares until I read up on it, and they said PTSD can cause it. And I never really used PTSD for myself because I felt like that was for military, for soldiers, but that's what it is.
Do women who have been abused this way hold themselves responsible or beat themselves up, struggle with that kind of thing, yep. Self-condemnation? Yep.
Absolutely. And you feel guilty. You don't want to hurt them. I remember there were times I would be praying that somebody would call the police. Why is no one calling the police? Because I couldn't do it. Mm-hmm. My kids were scared. Everybody was scared. And I just would say, Lord, please, somebody call the police. And one time in 10, 11 years I was with him, whatever it was, somebody called the police. And what do you think I did? I lied. I hid my broken toe behind the door, and because they were going to leave. They weren't taking him anywhere.
Oh.
And I was going to still be there. My daughter was still going to be there. So, yeah, you're fearful. One night I left him. Next morning, my daughter and I are in a hotel, and I get up to leave, and he found us and took the car. They're not stupid, but they're stupid.
How do you recover from all the fear and terror of being in that place for so long? What do you tell women?
Well, I wish that I would have had Mending the Soul back then. I didn't. So I slowly, on my own, had to find my way. There was not one thing. It was a combination of a lot of things. First and foremost, getting the hell out of there and not looking back. And then after that step, it was like, okay, what do I do now? And as a woman, your husband usually takes care of you. They're the bigger provider, all the things. So you're giving up everything. I walked away and left my home, my furniture, my clothes, everything, except what I could fit in my car and my daughter. Whatever you can fit in the car, take it. But it was getting away from it, because until you're out of it, you don't know that there's anything better. And then you have to cry and you have to get mad. And I get, to this day, there's things I get mad about. But it gets better. And the thing is, abuse will always be part of us. It's not going anywhere. It's my past, but it does not dictate my every moment of every day. Mm-hmm. It's my past, and it helps me strive for better. Me, like serving God, helping, giving women encouragement that they don't have to feel the way they feel every day. They don't have to let all its abuse hurt their bodies, and we start mutilating ourselves. Those are things that happen. I did it. You start doing that because you don't feel like, why is this happening? He doesn't love me. He's just beating me up, and he's telling me I'm ugly. He's telling me he could be with her or her, and you're fat, and you're this, and you're that, and so what's the purpose? So first and foremost, get away, pray, find a church, find a group, trusting group. A trusting group. You don't just tell your story to Tom, Dick, and Harry because it'll bite you.
You talked about broken bones, broken collarbone, having your piece of your colon removed, and struggling with anorexia, suicide attempt. How's your physical health today?
Not bad for 68. I'm starting to break down a little bit, but I'm healthy, and I do 12 to 15 miles a week, running, walking. I work out. I've been to boot camp. I taught aerobics. So that part's good. My stomach's better. Besides just some age stuff, I'm healthy. I'm not on any medication. I'm healthy. Yeah.
Talk about anger. Imagine at some point with women, anger starts bubbling up. Mm-hmm. When they start healing or beginning that process. Talk about what that looks like and how releasing that looks like, or processing it.
anger, you know, again, we just talked about it last night. Anger is real. Jesus felt anger, you know. Jesus felt he was abused. He feels what I have felt. And anger's part of it. That's part of the grieving thing, you know, being angry and realizing what you went through, what you, and, you know, the other thing is we allow it. And with mending the soul, you learn about your abuser and, you know, the abused family, but you really learn about yourself. And I allowed it, and I wasn't strong enough until at certain point that I walked away from it. Because people say, why did you stay? Why did you stay? Because I didn't know what else to do.
You talked about having zero self-esteem when you're in that situation, and do some women struggle with giving themselves permission to be anger and to feel and to grieve and to cry?
I'm sorry, I don't understand the question.
Do some women struggle with giving themselves permission?
Yes.
To grieve, cry, be angry, and all that?
Because our whole life as an abused woman is we're always taking care of them. Everything's about the abuser. Mm-hmm. So everything that we need is way back here. It's been stomped on. We don't even know what that looks like. I should say I didn't even know what that looks like. Other people but that's what happens.
So a woman has been in that situation. She's been physically abused, traumatized. She gets out. She cuts it off. Should that be a permanent cutoff, or what should that look like?
In my opinion, depends on if the abuser is a believer and if they're believers. You know, that's a big – I want to have a little hope for a believer who's an abuser, but then on the flip side, if you're a believer, why are you doing that? You know, but then sin is sin. Mm-hmm. You know, I was a believer and I was doing drugs and sleeping with a married man. So, you know what I'm saying? So it's, I say you need separation. If you're not feeling safe with a person, then counseling together, how do you do that? I tried that too. And I walked in and it was all about him, you know, as a couple. And it was like, okay, well, I'm not coming back here again. That did not help me at all. Counseling and have a relationship with Jesus. You know, if you're not a believer, get away from it and find some type of a group that's Christ-based to give you the hope that you can't have without Christ.
Talk about spiritual warfare and where that comes in, because we know we have an enemy who comes to steal, kill, and destroy. So this isn't just a secular, humanistic thing. There's a lot more going on.
Yep. Let's see. Well, the enemy doesn't want any of us to be settled. He doesn't want any of us to follow Christ. He doesn't want any of us to feel comfortable unless we're following him. So if you're a believer and all this stuff is happening, you have to realize that it is spiritual warfare and the enemy is using your relationship or the abuser, and God's allowed it. Mm. God knows what's happening, in my opinion. He knows. He knew what I was going through. He saw me, and those are questions we ask. Why did you let me go through that? Mm. Why did my kids have to be drugged through hell? And you watched it. Why didn't? Because he knew there was going to be that time where Sandy was going to be strong enough because I got fed up and I was going to lean into him and he was going to take me to the next step and protect my kids. But God, he sees everything. So you have to be aware of what's happening. Even to this day, when you wake up in the morning and you think, like, I wake up and I have nothing to be down about. My life is good and I can feel that. Like you talked about the battlefield stuff, like what is happening? And I have to go, Lord, make this stop because there's no reason for me to feel this way. Mm-hmm. But when you've been abused, it becomes like that natural intuition inside your body. You just wake up and you just wait for the next ugly thing to happen. Mm-hmm. So it is spiritual. I mean, I believe it's spiritual as well as, you know, the physical. It's all part of the whole game. And I don't have all those answers. You have to be aware of it.
So what would you say to the woman who is furious at God, saying, why did you let me do this?
Be furious with God. He already knows you are. He knew I was, and I still talk about it. It's okay. God already knows. He was mad. He got mad. Be mad. Mm-hmm. Pray. Talk to him. Cry. Put on Christian. Do whatever you have to do to grieve all that. Mm-hmm. And if you have to yell at God, yell at him. He loves us. He's the one that's not going to leave you because you're yelling and saying things that maybe you couldn't say to your family.
In the book of Job, where Job told God he stole away hope, paraphrasing, and he was railing in some points. In the book of Psalms, there's a lot of "Where were you in this deal?" type of thing. So, last week getting into your third marriage and bringing in anger and the abuse, so that baggage comes in. Mm-hmm. So what does that look like, kind of working that out?
A lot of hard work, a lot of questioning. Did I just do something stupid again? I married three non-believers, and I was a believer. Whether or not I was walking with Christ then, I was a believer and had been since I was 11. I know my dad was like, okay, Sam, you're going to keep her, right? You know, it's kind of a family joke, but it wasn't, you know, but it was real. But so there's a lot of battles, and you come into it and you already have all your other stuff. He has his, whatever. And they're not believers. His family's not believers. My family's believers. The kids are like, what are you doing, Mom? We heard that a lot. People gave us a year. The day we got married, they gave us a year. Mm. Christ saved our marriage. Mm. And every day that I see my husband grow stronger as a believer, trust God more each day, makes me more in love with him every day. When the flesh comes in, and our flesh does happen, and we see the ugly in each other, then I don't like that. I don't like that part about him. He don't like that part about me. The day that he gave his life to Christ was a weird day. Mm. He'd been drinking. He was hungover, and I was done. And I went off to church, to a Calvary Chapel in Southern California, came back, and he was, you know, hungover and not feeling good. And he said, do they have another service? I said, yeah, and I just played it. And he said, will you take me? I said, yes, I will. Will you brush your teeth? And he brushed his teeth, and we went to church, and he accepted Christ. There was still work to do, because that's an emotion. You know, there's those, you know, the emotional relinquishing of our sin and stuff. And he still had to grow. And that was still when we lived in California. And we've been here 21 years.
Safety is a really big deal when you've been through trauma, and a lot of women or men in some whatever situations, like, how do I find safety? There's an emotional cry for, I wasn't safe. How do I find it now? So what does that recovery process look like?
I think for me it was relying on God and myself, because I couldn't rely on anybody else. So in that period before I married my third husband, I was single and I was working and I was finding my own path. My kids were not with me anymore. They were adults. And I was like, oh my goodness. Okay. I had time for myself. I found myself. Women who have children, you still have to find yourself. You have to be confident in who you are and be safe with just yourself, I think, before you can let another man or however a man letting a woman in, when we've been hurt. And feeling safety that somebody isn't going to hurt you, they have to earn it.
30 seconds. Talk to the woman who's right smack in the middle of this abuse cycle.
There is hope. Look at yourself. There is hope. Again, find Mending the Soul. Find a church that offers support for abused women. Reach out to me at my email address, and I can help you find a Mending the Soul. Lean into a God-fearing woman who can help you find a place for you to have rest.
Mm. Okay. Sandy, thank you for your courage and for opening all of this up. It's been wonderful, and I love your transparency and your heart, and God has taken you through so much. And here you are speaking in front of 130,000 people. So, geez Louise, you know, I guess God redeemed some of that today, huh?
Amen.
So thank you for joining us, my friend, and we'll talk to you next time.
Do you want to be free?
Blazing Grace is a nonprofit international ministry for the sexually broken and the spouse. Please visit us at blazinggrace.org for information on Mike Janung's books, groups, counseling, or to have Mike speak at your organization. You can email us at email@blazinggrace.org or call our office in Chandler, Arizona at 719-888-5144. Again, visit us at blazinggrace.org. Email us at email@blazinggrace.org or call the office at 719-888-5144.
This program was sponsored by Blazing Grace Ministries.